You're listening to Rendezvous with a Writer with Bobby Jean and Jim Bell, only on LA Talk Radio.
Welcome to Rendezvous with a Writer, where readers and writers meet, and story is everything. We're your hosts tonight, Jim and Bobby Bell. You've just been listening to Hot Texas, Hot Texas Swing Band, our friend Alex Dormont, and
we are so excited that you are along for the ride again with us this week, or if it's a first time, welcome aboard. We're delighted to have you with us, and this is a special night for us because our guest is good friend and returning author, Bob Brill. Bob, hello, hello, hello.
Hey, guys. So always glad to see your shining faces after your smiling faces. It's been a long time.
It's so good to see you. We were just reminiscing, Bob. I think that this may be, in fact, today, tomorrow, might actually be our 15th anniversary of knowing you.
Really?
Yes.
Oh, okay. Well, I'll take that. You know,
that's a long time.
A good 15 years.
Because you were one of our authors that came with us many years during the Santa Clarita Cowboy Festival,
right?
Into the venue that we hosted called the Buckaroo Bookshop,
and this is
the weekend for the festival.
Hot dang, really?
Yeah, and you were always with us a little bit on Saturday, I think a little bit on Sunday. So we might not, it might be Saturday would be our 15th anniversary if we
give me a day here and there, 2 days minus. Hey, it's been, you know, how many years since the LA riots? It did happen in April too. So I know you wanted to mention that a little bit later on, but
that's also April. Yeah, and it is a really fun for anybody near the Los Angeles area. The Cowboy Festival is free. It's really fun. Just go to cowboyfestival.org, I think, Google Santa Clarita Cowboy Festival. It's fun, and there are a host of fabulous performers. John Chandler, who has been on this program with a guest host, Tom Swearingen, is going to be one of the performers there. So if you're looking for something to do this weekend and you're kind of not too far from Santa Clarita, put it down. Check it out.
Don't forget the William S. Hart Museum and Ranch right there. It's at Hart Park.
Right there.
That's such a great place to go. And especially if you love the old Western movies, you know, because he did both. He was both.
Yes.
And we're
all mutual friends with Peter Schirico. Mm-hmm. And he's doing his one-man show on Buffalo Bill tonight. Tonight and again Sunday afternoon, I think. So it is. We're so sorry we're not there. We were hoping we would be there this year and we could organize it again. We miss so many friends and all of our authors that would come every year. It was really a highlight of our year, and we just couldn't work it out. So yeah. So anyway, how fun, Bob! Happy anniversary.
Thank you. You too. Happy anniversary to you as well.
So, why don't you, Jim's going to, should we just go ahead and you want to read
his bio?
Yeah, read his bio. Yeah.
A little info on Bob. Bob Brill is award-winning journalist, author, filmmaker, and longtime radio broadcaster. His work as a network radio correspondent for UPI Radio took his career to the next level in the 90s, and Bob continues to anchor the news on radio in Los Angeles. Outside his radio career, Bob focuses on his work as an author, screenwriter, and film producer. Tonight, we'll be taking an in-depth look at his newest title, the thriller, 5 Seconds Till Die.
This is a really great romp. If you're, again, you're listening with us, maybe this is your first time. Maybe you've been watching all along. We love to endorse the books that we read. And this will get you from the first page. Characters. Oh, my God. We're going to talk about a cast of characters. Lots of one-liners. You'll think this is something serious, and then you'll be laughing the next minute. I think one reviewer, Bob, mentioned it reminded her a bit of the Pink Panther. And right. I had to think about that for a moment. And then I read more in the book, and I was like, yep, I got that. So congratulations. And, you know, we were talking in his bio. He talks about your radio career. And I just have to say, because we talked a moment ago about the Santa Clarita Cowboy Festival, you and I co-hosted on this very station, LA Talk Radio. We were two of Jim Christina's co-hosts over a number of years for the Writer's Block. And that's where we met Jim. And this mug is with me for every one of these shows. And so, Jim Christina, here's to you. And writers everywhere.
Amen to Jimmy. Missed Jimmy a lot. He was a great guy. He really was.
Yeah, fun times. So let's see. You want to tell us a little bit more about your background that maybe we didn't pick up in the bio?
Wow. Okay. I'm born and raised in the early part of my life in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. So I'm a diehard Steelers, Pirates, Penguins fan, and looking forward to a great season for Steelers this year anyway. And so I've always been a sports fan. I've written, I guess I got into radio right out of high school. I went to broadcast school. I didn't go to college. I went to broadcast school, one of those four-month deals. And it was Career Academy. So I went right into right out of high school into broadcasting. And I was 18 years old when I got my first job. My first job lasted one night. I quit. But my second job came about a week later. It was like I walked out. I've walked out of two jobs in radio, and mainly I won't go into it as to why. But been doing this now 53 years, and I look back the other day. I said I've been doing this for over half a century. What am I crazy? What I don't know. But, you know, it's like when I step back into the studio, you think, okay, I've been doing a job, blah, blah, blah. And then all of a sudden you get behind the microphone and it's like, it's new every night. It's old every night, but it's new, because you never know what, especially when you're doing news, you just don't know what's going to happen. It could be anything. It could be, and sometimes, we're on the air in the middle of the night when I'm working and there's an earthquake. And then everybody calls, and it could be just a 3.0, 3.5, whatever. But people get excited about that for obvious reasons. We live in Southern California. It just goes, nuts. People just call and we put them on the air and for a bit. And it makes radio, live radio, it's fun. It's also because of the job we do as journalists. It's serious. And occasionally, we get to fool around a little bit, not much. The other day we had a story about Cher and the outfit she wore for the video. I think right off the top of my head now. One where she's on the cannon on the ship. And if I could turn back time, that's it, right? We had a story about how her outfit sold for $162,000, which was, the editor had put in about 39 seconds of the song. And it's such a great song. And it's the middle of the night. And so I let the whole thing play,
sure.
And it was like I was dancing around the studio. The editor was dancing. My traffic person, she was dancing when we did it again later on. And it was just really, really a fun story to do. And it's great because it breaks up the tragedy of murder, death, politics, and all the rest of it, and international wars and things like that. So, but my love is baseball, of course, as you know, and writing. And I've written now 16 books, and written about 20 screen and teleplays. Haven't sold any yet. We're getting close on a few. And
look at a whole stack of them here.
We've done seven Lancers, Lancer Hero of the West. And we're getting ready some point, not far from now, to do number 8, and which will take place in San Francisco, and it deals with a stolen gold shipment. And now that I've mentioned that in public, I'm kind of locked into that. So that's kind of where that one's going to go. And there'll be 10 Lancers when I'm finished. That's the goal. And, of course, The Tattoo Murder, which I know you liked. And The Tattoo Murder took forever to write. It actually, I wrote it 10 years before I published it. And it went through a couple of gyrations. And there is a sequel planned for that called The Belt Buckle Murder. And The Belt Buckle Murder is loosely based on an actual murder that took place in Fresno that I covered when I was a reporter working for Kino Radio in the 80s in Fresno. So that's based on that. And then there's, you know, been a few others. There's been El Cabo, which is an international. I have a tendency to do international stuff. And so I've traveled some, and especially in Italy and everything. And I, of course, my heritage, my family, grandfather came, and three of my four grandparents came from Italy back in the last 2 centuries ago. Oh my gosh, 2 centuries ago. But yeah, so that's basically me.
You want to ask him about baseball?
Baseball. Hey, I have a couple questions. But first, how are the guys doing this year so far?
The Pirates, they suck. Yeah. I say that, but it's early in the season. They have just about the best starting pitching in the majors, but their bullpen is terrible, and the hitters just haven't kicked in yet. They've got a couple of really great players that, you know, they just need more bodies surrounding them that are, and for a couple of them, O'Neill Cruz, just to finally get consistent and get going. I think they're a couple of years away from being really good. It would amaze me this year if they did anything. If they make the playoffs, I'll be excited. You know, but it hasn't started out real well. It's been a little frustrating, but the starting pitching is just great. Paul Skeens and Keller and just the guys they have as starters are just amazing, and we're looking forward to that for sure.
Well, good. I understand there's some new equipment available this year. And what is this torpedo bat?
Well, you know, the torpedo bat is kind of interesting. Most people say it's shaped like a bowling ball. And if folks that grew up with in my era may remember in Little League and Babe Ruth and other leagues, we had a similar bat that was the Jackie Robinson model. And the Jackie Robinson model had a thick handle and then was almost straight out. It kind of went out like this a little bit, but the torpedo bat goes like this, where the Jackie Robinson went that. But it was a big thickness. It was a heavier bat. I didn't like to use it because I wasn't strong. And, I needed a more of a buggy whip bat when I was batting. And with the torpedo bat, it's sort of put more weight or more breadth where the bat meets the ball in a batter's swing. It sort of gives the batter more of a surface to hit. And it fits all the dynamics that is required in Major League Baseball or by the league. But the other thing is too, if it's giving the hitters an advantage, that's great, because the pitchers for the last 15 years have had this amazing advantage with analytics and science. And this bat came along from a scientist who is one of the coaches, who has a heavy duty deal in science. Mm-hmm. And it seems to be doing enough to increase home run power. However, teams like the Twins and the Tigers, the first couple of weekends, were using it, and they weren't doing much with it. So the Yankees were killing it. And but the Yankees have a lot of power hitters anyway. So it's an interesting concept. I don't know if it's going to really catch on. I think we just need more exposure to it, but we'll see. You know, it's interesting, but I'm not sure it's going to be a really great dynamic. If it is, it'll be great because it will help the hitters catch up.
Yeah. We are we're going to take a short break. Bob, don't go away.
I'm not.
Because when we come back, we're going to just get right into the book. If cool. you are a writer, find out what our sponsors, Blue Cottage Agency and Clicks by Madison, can do for you. And when we come back, we'll be chatting more with author Bob Brill, taking an in-depth dive to his new book, 5 Seconds to Die. Don't go away. We'll be right back. Rendezvous with a Writer is sponsored by Blue Cottage Agency and Clicks by Madison, your author publicity and book marketing team. Experienced, trusted, effective. Contact them today at bluecottageagency.com.
Welcome back. Welcome back to Running with a Writer. We're talking with our special guest tonight, Bob Brill, 5 Seconds to Die.
What a great read.
Yeah, this is a fun read, and it's a serious read, and we have a few bodies that pop up here and there.
I should have been keeping a body count. Yeah. Before, Bob, we get to this, though, because we can see if you're watching with us and you're not just on audio, you'll see Brill Productions is right there with Bob, kind of behind Bob. Do you want to just talk about Brill Productions and what all is involved, Bob?
Well, basically, Brill Productions is a catch-all for everything I do. I created Brill Productions actually in 1989. We became a corporation just a few years ago, basically to encompass everything I do with writing, as far as books, screenplays, and any other thing. And, you know, it's always good to be an LLC for, you know, protection purposes. You know, we copyright everything right away, but it's mainly just a way to encompass everything we do. So that, you know, put my phone numbers out there all over the place anyway, and my emails. So it's just, that's basically it. It gives me an opportunity to say, you know, Brill Productions is where we are. And we've produced 5 short films, 1 feature film documentary on the Sylmar earthquake. Mm-hmm. I, you know, went to high school and lived in Sylmar, California for a number of years. And I was a senior in high school when the great Sylmar earthquake hit, and 60-odd people died, 2 hospitals collapsed. And it was, you know, it was one of those days that nobody ever who went through it will ever forget. And on the 50th anniversary, we did a documentary. I went back and with my co-producer, Ed Gus, and we went back and interviewed a lot of people who I grew up with, who experienced the Sylmar earthquake, which turns out to be, according to some seismologists, the most important earthquake in the history of this country. Everything that happened in San Francisco had some things happen, but so much of the modern technology and things that we have after 71 came because of the 71 earthquake. The citizens CERT teams, after every earthquake, you had building code changes, but also search and rescue. And a whole bunch of things that took place because of Sylmar. And it was just amazing. And never realized that until we did the documentary.
Yeah.
It's on Amazon Prime or Tubi. You can watch that if you want.
Yeah. How interesting.
We moved to L.A. in 91. Yeah, we got to experience our first one then.
Oh, yeah. Oh, in 94.
Yeah.
And 94.
Yeah. We had a few, you know, little ones before that to us. They were like, what is that? Even though it was like a 2.0, you know?
Yeah. It's 71 was my first, you know. We had moved out back here in 63. So 71 was the first earthquake I ever felt of any significance. I don't know if I did the other ones either, but it was massive. I mean, you know, I can go through that morning and know everything that happened that morning, you know?
Yeah.
You know, I can remember it was 4 a.m. It was at 4:30. We're underneath the dining room table. The place is shaking. The chandeliers are moving.
Table right here. Yeah.
And the phone rings, you know. I think, who can call us this time in the morning that's in this earthquake? it's my mother, and she wants to know, well, there's an earthquake going on. How are you doing? We're hiding under the table right now. I'll call you back.
Yeah, she's in Ohio. She's like, oh, I'm just wondering. I'm like, yeah, the refrigerator is moving across the kitchen. You know, we got to get off the phone.
I remember everything in our front room in Silmar, in the house we lived in, was upside down. The tables were upside down. Wow. Like you said, the refrigerator was in another spot. The stove was in another spot. Everything moved. And the thing about it, I remember drop and cover when you had to do this?
Yes.
Well,
yes.
That was the thing which I did. First thing I did was I was on the floor, you know, and I tried to get under the bed, but I was too big for that. And I had one of those very heavy television sets off to the right on a metal stand. It wasn't anchored or anything. And I did the drop and cover. No, I did. I laid out prone. And I said, no, I'm supposed to do drop and cover. So I did this. And about 2 seconds later, that TV fell. If I'd stayed prone, it fell right on where what would have been the back of my head. And I wouldn't.
Doing the air.
Wow. Wow. All right. Well, we're going to move off of earthquakes and into this book.
Hollywood.
Yeah. What can I say?
That's what happens when old friends get together. You sort of don't look at your clock and you suddenly realize, oh, what a great conversation. We need to move on. So this book, 5 Seconds to Die. Do you want to ask the first question?
Yeah. What was your inspiration? Do you have a particular inspiration for this storyline?
Yeah, you know, basically, this is the first book. This is sort of a departure for me because this is the first book I ever wrote. I wanted it to read like a movie, not a script, but I wanted it to read like a movie. That was the goal in writing this book, is to hopefully this will get made into a movie. So it's very cinematic. It's when you usually write a novel, you do a little bit more descriptive. And in this, I moved from some of the descriptive to almost the visual, changing the descriptive to a visual. And basically, that was the idea. And I wanted something that was fast-paced, which you can read this in one night. It's almost 200 pages, but it reads very fast. Chapters are short. I wanted it to be fun. And a lot of it, to be honest with you, not a lot of it, but quite a bit of it, is based on things that happened in my own life, such as a lot of the things in Italy. And there's so many people in the book who are actually real people. And almost everyone in who's in characters in Italy are real people. They're doing what they do. A friend of mine owns a restaurant bar in Rome called Enoteca, and her name is Monica. And Monica at Enoteca is in the book, and so several other people as well. Dick Kroc, who plays is a DEA agent in my book, is a real retired DEA agent friend of mine. So there's a lot of people in it who I used, and there's certain things that happened in the book that I've experienced directly, as well as just, you know, I've been to certain places and ordered certain foods and things like that. And I wanted it to be fast-paced and international, but I wanted it to be starting out as a sort of film noir-ish. Uh-huh. And when you read the first paragraph, you realize this could be a fun book.
Yeah, absolutely. Would you quickly, and we're going to talk in more depth about characters in a few moments, but can you give us, without spoiler alerts, you know, just a kind of an overview of sort of what's the premise and where are we going with you as our leader?
Sure. Very basically, Casey Order is a private eye who used to be a reporter, and now he's a relatively new private eye. And the name Order translates to the town next to my ancestral grandparents' home, which is Odolo. Odolo in Italian translates to order. And that's how I got the name Casey Order. Basically, it starts out film noir. He runs into this woman who named Ginger Queen, who used to be a pretty big B movie star. Dichotomy there. And she is overheard. Yeah, she looks, we made her look a little bit like Michelle Pfeiffer, which is kind of I didn't come up with that. So the publisher did. She was the former girlfriend of a notorious Armenian mob boss in Glendale, which Glendale was very heavily Armenian population. And it's a suburb of Los Angeles. And she overheard part of a plot. And the plot, as it turns out, is Jerry Artemian, who is the Armenian mob boss, got together a loose-knit group of criminal gangs from around the world, all of which are real gangs, and one I created, who they're brutal, and they've come together, and he's the head of this cartel or coalition, whatever you want to call it, and their goal is they are going to hack the 2028 Los Angeles Olympics. Everybody who walks through the door or has a connection to the Olympics will be hacked with their personal information. They've set up this amazing thing to the tune of, they figure they're going to get $82 billion. And you might say, well, that's a lot of money. But at the same time, you have to realize who goes to Olympic Games. Kings, queens, defense ministers, prime ministers, all these people who may have nuclear codes. And they're going to get hacked. Mm-hmm. And so Casey Order, and to make a long story short, and Ginger Queen, he's reluctant to hook up with her because of who she slept with previously. He's reluctant to even get involved with her. And there's a lot of sexual tension. They kind of don't, you know, you think they're going to get together, they don't. You think they're going to get together.
Read the book.
Yeah. And so anyway, the whole thing is based on a stolen flash drive from the key hacker. And she takes off with it, and because she doesn't want to be involved now, and it becomes an international chase. There's car chases, there's motorcycle chases, there's shootings, there's a boat situation, and it goes all over the world, in Europe and back to the United States. And the idea is to get this thing before the hacker can redo and fix what he's lost. And, you know, so their goal is to get this back to the good guy hackers and figure it out and keep the Olympics from being hacked.
We are going to take another very short break. And we would love to take this moment. We're going to step away to tell you about one of the places that you can order books from many of the authors that we feature on the show, including many of Bob Brill's titles. The Out West Shop affiliate page at bookshop.org. And when we come back, we're going to talk a little more in depth and we're going to talk about some characters. So stay tuned. We'll be right back. Story is everything. Find a great one on Out West Shop's bookshop. Go to outwestshop.com, find books and CDs on the menu, choose Shop Out West on bookshop.org. Browse through featured authors on Rendezvous with a Writer. Explore curated book lists and our featured picks. Add in note cards, calendars, and jigsaw puzzles. One-stop shopping for great gifts. Use the search box to find thousands more titles. Make the switch. Your purchase supports us as independent booksellers. That's our story.
Welcome back to Rendezvous with a Writer. Special guest Bob Brill and 5 Seconds to Die. Oh. Before we get back to the book, though, we want to sort of make a little announcement here regarding Galaxy Press. Tonight, they're having a special award ceremony there in Hollywood for all the short story writers and the illustrators of the forthcoming book. And I think it's Writers of the Future, Volume 41.
We talked with Emily Goodwin of Galaxy Press. She was with us in January, and we talked about the 40th. Yeah. And she and John even invited us to be there tonight. And part of our plan was to be there.
No, we didn't.
But what are we going to do instead?
We're going to watch. What do we have to watch here? Watch writersofthefuture.com?
Yes. Yeah. It'll start at 7:00 Pacific time, which is right after this show. Go to writersofthefuture.com, and they're going to be broadcasting live. This is a black tie, red carpet event right there in Hollywood. And it's going to be a really, really fun thing. And we really hope we can make it next year. So do that. And we hope to have in the fall, one or two of the winning authors and maybe an illustrator on with us with the good ones again. So so that's what you need to do when we're off the air, but not yet, because we're talking,
About the Bob, about his book. You know, it really is a good storyline. It takes us all over the world. And there are twists and turns, and you put a lot of humor into it. I'm looking to this thing to be a movie, so.
Yeah.
Because I think it would make a real good one. You could take it either way. You could make it a dark movie or a light and fun movie or somewhere down the middle, but it's movie stuff.
Yeah. And you know, Bob, when I was reading it, you do write the Casey Order character in first person.
Right.
But then we go where a lot of these other cartels and gangs and things are, and we get to be like a fly on the wall, and we get to be with them. And Casey doesn't know what they're all doing.
Right.
Was that part of your writing with the cinema in mind?
Yes. Yes. I wanted to break a few eggs as far as literary is concerned, and break through some walls. And yeah, that's basically it. You hit it on the head. That you have to kind of bring that around, and you know, with the idea of show not tell, and so you're right on the money.
Yeah, it took me a little bit as a reader, and then I thought, I know what's going on here. The other thing is, of course, we spent years in the Los Angeles area, as you now all have heard about Bob's experiences. What's really fun is if you are in the LA area, or you have visited the LA area, or you have been in the park, the highways that are just parking lots, Bob takes you, you will feel like, oh, I'm home. I get it. You know,
you know, and you mentioned some things.
Yeah,
the Peterson Museum, Musso and Frank.
Yeah, Peterson Automotive Museum. Yeah. Yeah. And I would imagine you mentioned before that we go to Italy, we go to Scotland, we go to other places. And I think I would imagine if I lived in Scotland, I would feel when you take us to Scotland, like, oh, I know that place. Oh, exactly. I've been to that place. Or Italy. We're in Italy quite a bit. What is it about Potenza? Potenza? Did I say it right?
Yep.
What is it about Potenza that grabs your heart?
That is my grandfather on my dad's side and my grandmother on my dad's side, my grandparents, that's where they were from. They left Potenza in 1896 and established their family in the Pittsburgh area not long after that, and had 11 kids, and one of which later ones was my father. And Potenza means force. It's close to being a literal translation. And it's a city on the top of a hill. It's halfway between Bari on the Adriatic and Naples on the Mediterranean. And it's up in the mountains. And it's a city of about, I guess, maybe about 60, 70,000 at the moment. I haven't checked in a while. But it's just a city. It's not a tourist location at all. It's if you're looking for things to do in Italy that are touristy, you don't go to Potenza. There's a lot of places you don't go, but that's one of them. And it just in my heart, you know. And I know in the tattoo murder, I gave the main character the name John Potenza.
Yeah, you did.
So that's I've used that quite a bit up north. My heart is in a place called Otolo or Bione, which is where my mother's family is from. And I have a lot more relatives there. Actually, I still have relatives there, and in Potenza, not so much. But it's that's so personal to me. And when I write, you know, I like to imagine where I'm at, and I like to write about places where I've been, and because it means more to me. I hate to create a town that doesn't exist, but you know, if I know a place where I've been to a place, and I've been to Potenza many times, it really is close to my heart. And I hope, and the places in Scotland, you're exactly right. I've been to those places, the old church, the hotel, and Glasgow, and the airport, and in Belfast, and things like that. So, yeah.
Yeah. And I think that we fast move through most of these. It's another one of the cinematic, true. And you've got us on every kind of vehicle. I think just we're even on a bus, I think, for a short time. Yeah, I mean, if it's a vehicle, I think we have an experience on it. And so, again, that just moves the story ahead, but it gives it that speed that you anticipate with a thriller, too.
Yeah. It is, and you—it's amazing. The boy, the bad guys—they always show up.
Well, when you got so many cartels, you know, we have a Russian gang, we have an Armenian gang, we have a Chinese gang, we have the Mexican mafia, the Aryans, and the gang that I created is the Medusa Connection, and that is a lesbian gang. And I sought out for reality purposes, I sought out lesbian friends of mine who were very, very cooperative. And I won't tell you which one, but one of them appears in the book. So,
yeah, that was a fun group. And they were not to be reckoned with.
They were right up there with all the rest.
Right.
Absolutely. Okay, so let's talk for a moment about characters. Because you've we've been talking, and you've also talked a little bit about how many of them are people you know. Or,
right.
But when you're thinking about how do you, I know this is just a mystery to all of us that are readers, but does a character just sort of knock on your shoulder and go, hey, I want to be in that book? You know, how do you, or, okay, that's how they do
it. you know, and a couple of these characters I borrowed from previous things I've done, like Garver Eastwood, who's the FBI agent involved. In the very first short film I shot, Garver Eastwood was a character. And so was Trixie DiOro. And both of them I borrowed from my first short film. And Garver Eastwood was sort of an homage-type character. Clint Eastwood, who I admire tremendously, Clint Eastwood in Play Misty for Me, one of his early films, one of the characters in there was named Garver. And so I took Garver and Eastwood and created the FBI agent. I do that often, more often than I used to. Now, in the Lancer novels, I get more heavily into a core group. There's Doc Holliday, Wyatt Earp, and because they all live in the same town, and each book starts out that way. But in the other books, the novels such as, 5 Seconds to Die and also The Tattoo Murder, I usually create characters based on need and history. You know, this is what I need in this spot. And so I think about it and coming up with a name, you never want to come up with common names because if it becomes a film, the legal department does their research and says, you can't use that name. There's somebody out there who's going to sue you. So, in a novel, it's not so much, in the world, it's kind of a lot different. So, but to answer your question about characters, where they come from, that's basically it.
I think we hear this a lot from songwriters too. If you hang out with a songwriter or an author, don't be surprised if you show up in the story or the song. Bob contacted me probably a couple years ago now, as he probably contacts a lot of the folks that he includes, to just chat with me a little bit about a book he was working on, a Lancer book, and he had an idea and how would I feel about that. Yeah. So Bob, obviously you did that with this too. So what we'd love to do is we're going to just call out a name, a character name. And if you would just give us a sentence or two about the character, sure. I think that would be fun. Some of them we've already mentioned. You want to start, honey?
Speaking of being a character, look at character. You weren't a stripper or something like that in this book, were you?
No.
Not quite. She was, how would you say?
Read sensual. The book. It was an honor. I mean, it was such an honor, and it was so fun to have the conversation.
I'm glad you liked it. I really
am. Absolutely. Right? I wish I was that girl, you know, but authors have great imaginations, Bob. Great imagination.
That's right. Well, the thing is, we haven't seen each other, so you couldn't slap me so far.
No, no. And I would, and I wouldn't have anyway. Okay, call out a name. Who would you like him to talk about?
Well, we need to say just a couple words about Ginger, okay? What was she like?
Ginger was a former B-movie star who never really crossed into making major films. She did a lot of movies. And obviously, if you look at the cover of the book, you're thinking Michelle Pfeiffer, but not as big a star as Michelle Pfeiffer at all. She did a lot of B movies, had her times when, you know, ended up on the casting couch and during that time period and trying to make it in Hollywood. But she was very sexy. But then again, who in Hollywood isn't, you know, so there's that whole thing. And she was smart, and she's now down on her luck, but she sure dresses well.
I think
the one line I wrote in there was, She's not a Roland Nichols gal. And looking at the purse she was wearing, it was a Gucci bag, but it wasn't an eBay knockoff.
So. Right. Yeah. Okay. Tell me about two guys, Taco Miller and Rico Hot Rod Rodriguez.
Oh, Rico. Yeah. Rico is, they're both obviously Latin. This is Southern California. And they're two hackers. Taco Miller is the world's best hacker. And Rigo is a good friend of Casey Order, who's also a good hacker. That is times with some of the bad guys. I mean, you know, he hit up a few alarms and that kind of thing in his times. But Taco is really one bad person. And he is a genius when it comes. He's the one that developed this hack to go forward and try to hack the Olympics. He's also got his life on the line because he made one big mistake.
Okay, who do you want to call out a name? Who?
Jerry Artemian. Does he really exist?
Oh, Jerry Artemian is the main mob boss. Armenian mob boss in Glendale, who is super smart, super influential. Obviously, he's the Armenian version of an Italian Don, and is very wise, but he's also brutal. I won't use the line that I used in the book that Casey Order felt that he didn't want to hook up with her. Ginger Queen, as soon as she mentioned she used to sleep with Jerry Artemian, because he'd be dead in a very brutal way, and he didn't want to go there.
How about this character Bob Brill that shows up?
What's that all about?
Yeah, who's this guy Bob Brill?
Well, it's interesting because it kind of starts with the four sisters in Italy who were actual sisters. And one of my best friends of all time, international friends, who passed away many years ago, was their father. And so when I put him in the book, they are the type that who would ask if they know me very well. And they would ask, I mean, I've known them since they were young teenagers. And they're all older now, and some of them married. And they would ask, "Hey, would you ever heard of Bob Brill?" And so that's where it kind of comes up. I'll leave it at that.
It's very clever. It's very clever how Bob Brill is woven into the story.
And it's kind of fun.
I got a great kick out of that.
Hey, if the movie ever gets made, it means I get a part.
there you go. Let's see, one more name. Call out another name, honey.
We have time for
one more name.
You know, You know, we got a lot of these guys that are the leaders of the gangs. How about this Janice Smith? He's kind of the head of the Bloods and Crips.
Yeah.
Yeah. Janice Smith is the head of a black gang, and they're on the fringe. They're involved, but they're still on the fringe because Janice is one of the smartest guys you ever want to meet. And he is, everybody knows him. He's sort of like in The Magnificent Seven, Calavera. If you've ever seen the movie, the Mexican bandit Calavera, who he's talked about in the whole movie, but he plays an important role. But you never really see him, you know, but everybody knows he's there. But, you know, and that's Janish. And he pops up later on, and he has an influence in what happens and throughout the rest of the story.
Yeah. And of course the title 05, and as I thought about the way the title is written, you know, with the colon in front of the 05, and you realize, oh, that's like, you know, a bomb. I mean, that's like, you know, they're working to to get a bomb before it goes off. And of course we're talking about the hack and whether or not. And so this is a countdown book, and you kind of hold your breath, especially as we get closer and closer to the end. It's a great read, and I want to see it on film. I want to see it on film. So I'm just looking at time. What are you working on next, and where can people find you?
Well, they can always find me at bobbrillbooks.com. All my books are there, bobbrillbooks.com. If they're interested in screenplays and that kind of stuff, bobbrillfilms.com. That's the easiest way. And of course, you can always find all of that and other stuff on bobbrill.com. And, you know, it's easy. You know, I just found it easy. And then, you know, having people wonder what's your stuff? What's your stuff? If you look up my name, I'm there. And that's pretty much, if you Google me, you'll find me. Let's put it that way. Oh, by the way, I am not Bob Brill, the dentist. I'm not Bob Brill, the drummer for Berlin.
Oh, I wondered about that.
I'm not. I'm definitely not Bob Brill, the bodybuilder. That dude is buff. You know,
they should all be in your books, Bob.
Yeah, they may be at some point. If there's ever a sequel, they may be.
Oh my gosh!
But and as far as what I'm working on, I'm working toward finishing up a couple of scripts that I'm at the very end of. I just sort of taken a little bit of a break. You know, a couple of years ago, we did option the Patty Wagon story, the burlesque queen who married a Major League Baseball player. And we're just, you know, still in the process of, you know, it's always money talks, you know, and so it's that whole thing. But in my producer, Stuart Young back in New York, is, you know, we're just trying to raise money and try to get a meeting with Netflix. That would be nice. And you know, I've got the other three books or two books planned. We're not sure if we're going to do a sequel to this. I'm just kind of waiting to see how it goes. The other two I will have another version of each, Tattoo Murder and Lancer.
Great.
But that's outside of that. And waiting for my later this year for my oldest grandson gets to graduate from high school, which
it's exciting.
It's like, okay, I can't wait for that.
Jim has a quote. We're just looking at time. We just have time for one.
Yep. We're giving an introduction to the lady we asked about before, Ginger Queen. And Casey is talking. I met her in a dive bar along the streets of Paris 3 weeks before the Summer Games in the City of Lights. Her green eyes stood out below her flaming red hair. She was hard to miss, and so was an invite as I sat in the corner drinking my gin. To come hit a look was hard to ignore as she headed towards the door and into the Paris night. Outside, the streets were damp, as I followed this lady with a story to tell. She turned the corner, leaving me in the breach, with her long legs nowhere in sight. Then, suddenly, two arms grabbed me from the alleyway, pulling me in. I didn't have time to fight and wouldn't have if I'd known it was a redhead planting a big wet kiss on my lips. Let's begin again. That's about as cornball an opening as I've ever written. We love that part.
We have enjoyed our time with Bob Brill tonight. And next week, author Jack Craywinkle joins us and we'll be talking about his book, Blue Harvest. We want to thank everybody for being with us. For our sponsors, Blue Cottage Agency and Clicks by Madison, Sam Hassan from LA Talk Radio. And
as we always say, it's always a great day out west.
Keep
Thanks,
writing,
Bob.
And we'll keep reading. See you down the trail.
Thank you, guys.